Welcome back to the Garage Series for IT Pros, where we try to answer your toughest questions for Office.
I'm Yoni Kush.
And I'm Jeremy Chapman. So last week we talked about telemetry. We went a little bit into that topic, a little bit deeper with our telemetry lead PM, Chris Yu. So this week we're going to change gears a little bit and talk about this new user-based world where we've got basically all of our identity in the cloud, and that's performing our activation services. We talked a little bit about that in past episodes.
But there are some really key things that we need to cover. I'm actually pretty excited. We've got a fantastic guest to bring to you today. But there's a couple of considerations there, right? We're moving towards an internet-based office. There are going to be some scenarios where customers certainly out in the field are concerned that they might have some scenarios that just doesn't work for them.
Right. So I'll hear every day pretty much from customers that are maybe in a defense industry or in the government or
various something like that.
Banks, all these, you know, maybe high security environments where they say, well, I've got some users that never ever connect to the internet, or they got multiple PCs or whatever.
Right. At the moment, we're using a KMS server to activate those office installations. What are we going to do?
Sure, and in those cases we do have, and we didn't take anything away, we've got the volume licensing bits of Office that you can use in closed environments. But we really solved 80-20-wise for that 80% scenario where most devices are actually connected to the internet and can be attributed to a user.
Exactly. So the 20%, those ones that still need to remain on-premises and don't have those internet connections, you can still use the KMS or Mac activations that you're used to. But in order to move towards this new model with Office 365, there's a couple of things that we need to consider around identity, around activation, and we'll also look today at data access and where data is going to be stored.
Right. And before we get started, let's have a look at today's trivia question.
With single sign-on in Office 365, what work is needed to add users and maintain passwords? Is it A, daily list imports, B, manual user entry, or C, runs by itself, no extra work?
Stay tuned for the answer at the end of the show. So Jeremy, in today's episode, we're really going to jump down into the identity considerations for Office 365, right?
Right, and there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt that we're hearing. We call it FUD from our customers around, you know, what's really in the identity store? What am I roaming? Where's my data being held? All of that stuff.
Right, exactly. So let's break it down a little bit. We'll talk about identity for a second. So with Office 365 Pro Plus, we essentially have three options that we can go with for identity. The first being the purely Azure AD-based option, where we manually or through a CSV file upload something like that, put our usernames and passwords up into the Azure AD.
Right, and the second one that we can do is just take our Active Directory if we've got one and synchronize that. And really every 3 hours, it's adding users and subtracting users, and you can filter all that on OUs and everything else.
It just runs on a domain
joined PC. But it's really only populating the identity store at that point.
They are still the same scenario, right? Both the first and the second scenario are still reliant on the Azure AD to hold those usernames and passwords, and actually to authenticate the user when they come to access those services.
Right, so in those cases, passwords are indeed mastered in the cloud, but the users are basically synchronized with what's on premises in their local AD.
Right, exactly. So the big shift from that to the third option, which is Active Directory Federation Services, or ADFS, is that with that scenario, the usernames and passwords are mastered on-premises in your Active Directory environment.
Right, so that enables a single sign-on environment, so I can have the same password policies, my same authentication requirements, all of that stuff I'm maintaining in-house.
The passwords stay inside control.
Right, and the passwords themselves then don't get synchronized up to Microsoft's data centers. They're completely on your premises.
Right, exactly, and in fact, all that's really happening is when the users go to access the Office 365 services, they're redirected back to your ADFS infrastructure, authenticated and sent back with a token.
Right, and when we talk about data, that's the next point around this. Where is my data actually being stored? Well, that's something else where we hear, you know, Office 365, it must mean that Exchange or SharePoint or all that data is in our cloud, in the Microsoft cloud. Actually, it can be in your cloud. It can be in your private infrastructure as well.
Right, the key component we're talking about here, Office 365 Pro Plus, is only the client bits. So if you want to use the fantastic click-to-run capabilities to actually get the client bits onto your machine, you can do that and keep your mailboxes, your SharePoint site, link, whatever it is, living on-premises, yeah?
Right, so the security really is up to you, and it's really the same whether you're using Office Professional Plus 2013 or Standard or Office 365 Pro Plus. But really, we shouldn't be taking my word for it. I've actually caught up with our tamed technical fellow.
Some say if you cut him, he bleeds ones and zeros.
And every time Windows blue screens, he grows an inch.
He's called Mark Rusinovich.
Hello, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
So you just got back from Costa Rica, I heard.
Yeah, had a fun week down in the sun.
Excellent. So we're here to talk about security with Windows Azure, Active Directory, and how that relates to Office 365. Why don't you tell us about the security model?
Well, actually, the answer to that's a little bit involved because there's multiple layers of security that we look at. One is physical security of our data centers, making sure that disk drives don't walk out of the data center, crush them before they leave, that people don't come in and then leave with something they shouldn't have. Moving up to application level security, we're running a multi-tenant service where the tenants don't necessarily like each other, so we have to harden it from a security perspective, but not just from that, but also resource isolation, because we don't want one customer denial of service attacking another one with the way they use the directory. And then we, of course, are operating the services, something that we didn't do back in the kind of box product world. So we've got a lot of operational security, which includes things like multi-factor authentication, more access to this, to manage and monitor the service, to just-in-time access for administrative access, to monitoring and logging and diagnostics to detect anomalies.
I've heard that we've also hired an elite team of hackers to try to hack into the service.
Yeah, that's a team that I think it'd be fun to be on. We've got a team, we call them the red team. We do red team exercises where we give them kind of a capture the flag target. We'll say, go see if you can get into the server, go see if you can get into this account. And we start with the initial set of starting conditions. Like they might have to assume they know nothing about the topology of the service and have to figure it out. Say go, and then they come back in a couple weeks and give us a report on what they did. At the same time, we've got a blue team that is trying to detect them coming into the system. And it's kind of always interesting to see the results of those reports. We find places where we can tighten things up and improve things and put in more monitoring to always improve the security of the service and make sure that we really are implementing what we've designed, actually.
Just switch gears a bit. You also just wrote a book.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So my second cyber thriller, the first one I wrote last year, Zero Day. This one came out in September, and it's about cyber espionage and a lot of stuff that we've been seeing in the news around China and hacking and cyber espionage. In fact, China plays a key role in the book.
Are you Jeff Aiken?
Yeah, in many ways I am, actually. I don't know if I consciously realized that as I was writing the book, but in the retrospect, it definitely looks like I put some of myself in him.
I really enjoyed his book as well, you know.
Yeah, I read his first book as well, and that was great. So let's shift gears back to activation.
Activation, right. So we certainly understand by now that we have some considerations in terms of identity, and we understand that Office is now a user-based piece of software, right? So we're activating five installs against each user.
Sure. So when we've got single sign-on enabled, for example, some of the core questions I get, at least, is, can I get rid of that prompt to sign in to Office 365? Because a lot of people, maybe that's a new experience for them or whatever. We've actually built that in. I want to show a demonstration of what that looks like.
Okay.
As a user getting IT to provision him a new copy of Office 365 Pro Plus, and I can get rid of that whole sign-in dialogue.
Right, absolutely.
Right, so I'm on my Windows 8 desktop here. I'm joined to the domain. You can see I've got my name up in the corner. IT has provisioned me Office, and when I go in, it just looks like any other software distribution automated. I click and open PowerPoint, and you see that I've got no dialogue. So not only have I gotten rid of, in this case, the single sign-on dialogue, but I've also gotten rid of all the other things like customer experience improvement program and first-run videos and all that stuff.
Right, through group policy, of course.
Definitely.
Right, so it's probably worth taking a look at how that experience, even in an Active Directory Federation environment, looks with domain-joined machines versus non-domain-joined machines.
Sure.
Because that experience that you're talking about is very specific to an ADFS-based Office 365 Pro Plus environment on a CorpNet machine that's connected to the corporate network at the time, right?
Right, and so, there are a few tricks as well. I mean, you got to do some things like disabling the sign-in, enabling org ID and all that stuff in group policy to get all of that to work.
Right, exactly. But we still come down to the point where if you take any of those elements out of the equation, it looks a little bit different. So what I have here is my PC still using my Microsoft Office 365 account on the same tenant that you were working off, but my machine is not domain-joined. So let's have a look at what the experience is like on that one.
Great.
So you can see here that instead I'm actually prompted to log in with my username and password, which I'll just pop in there now. And we can see that Office 365 knows it's an ADFS site and redirects me to the ADFS portal. And straight away, I can go to the portal now and I can do my Office 365 Pro Plus install directly from the portal. We'll kick that off, as we've seen a few times already now. Our install should start off really quickly and stream everything down. So while we're waiting for this to happen, the bits are actually being streamed down from the Microsoft Content Delivery Network, right? Jump back over here, and any second, we should actually see our Office 365 bit, oh, there they go, turn up on the start screen. And let's jump in. We'll see when I open up Office, it's still coming through, but the same is true, right? The credentials that I used to sign into the ADFS site sent down with that click to run install so that we don't actually have to type our username and password in again, and we're straight into Office here. That Office installation has been activated and away we go.
Right, so one of the questions I get then from people who have to show the sign-in screen is, do I have to sign in every single time? Are my user credentials being passed up and down into maybe Microsoft's activation service or whatever? What happens there?
No, okay, so it's really not how it works. The first time that you either kick off your download from the portal, or if you were doing some kind of distribution-based installation, the first time you launch a Word application, the Office installation gets activated. Mm-hmm. It creates a token with a PID from that Office installation, and then each time you open Word, it's just that token that's being sent back up and down to the activation service on the internet.
Right, so that PID gets sent down, and then basically we're only sending up a GUID or something or a token back up to the service to make sure that you're still an active user.
Right, so there is actually no username and password. So that kind of leads on to another interesting idea in that I hear a lot out in the field, IT organizations saying, well, this is really interesting for us because what it means is that when a user leaves our organization, we can deprovision them. And because we can deprovision them so easily, we can allow them to install Office on PCs that we as IT don't control because we know that we have that opportunity to deprovision them afterwards, right?
Right, so your software assets stay completely in-house. Now I want to show you what it looks like if I actually deprovision you. Then you can show what the experience looks like after I've gotten rid of you from my account.
What did I do?
Nothing bad. I'm just showing this for the demonstration purposes.
Right, okay. I won't take offense.
It's not a prelude to something. All right, so now I'm going into my Windows 8 machine again. I've opened the portal, and I'll just go to the Users and Groups tab. Now, what I see here is a search key, so I'll go ahead and search for your name. I'm going to find, in this case, Yoni. It's going to display your name, and I check the box. At that point, I've got a trash can. I can go ahead and delete you from my tenant. So now you've been deleted. Now let's see what that looks like on your machine.
Okay, sure. We'll give that a second to take effect. But we'll jump back on my machine now. And we can see here that if I jump back into Word, it'll load up right away. And I should be able to open it. Oh, no, there you go. So we can see straight away that the second Word opened, my token was sent back up to the activation service, which said, no, this user's been deprovisioned, and straight away we've gone into reduced functionality mode. And what that means is that for the first 7 days, we'll get some notifications saying that we need to reactivate Office, and after that we go into reduced functionality mode and Office essentially becomes a viewer.
It's just a viewer, so you can open up your files, read documents, you know, all those personal files, for example, but anything else you need to edit, you'd need a real activation to work in that case.
Right. So look, I think that kind of covers off the activation piece quite well. What about data?
You know, we see all the different stubs of, you know, of our most recently used documents. We saw that whether in the portal, when I did the demo on all the different devices, we saw most recently used document list on the phone.
This is like the roaming settings like we were talking to Sky about earlier.
Right, and this is one of our roaming settings that we have, but you know, we're not actually roaming the files themselves. So we got your most recently used docs, but you still have to basically resolve the path to get to that file. So everything that we just saw on the left-hand side of the screen were just stubs, just links to your most recently used documents.
Just links, exactly. So the key to remember here is that the data stays in your control. It goes where you want it to go.
So why don't we go back to today's trivia question and get the answer.
With single sign-on in Office 365, what work is needed to add users and maintain passwords?
Did you know the answer, Yoni?
I do. It was, of course, C. Once you've got your ADFS infrastructure set up, it runs by itself. There's no additional maintenance required to master those usernames and passwords in the cloud because, of course, they're not actually there in the cloud.
Right, so that's basically all we had today. I wanted to wrap up and say thank you to our special guest, Mark Rusinovich.
Mark Rusinovich, that was awesome, man.
Check out his book, Trojan Horse, which is available now in all the different bookstores.
Absolutely. So look, check out our blog, microsoft.com/garage. All the resources are on there as always.
Right, next week we're gonna go a little bit deeper into the dive around deployment. And you're gonna be doing a race against all of the different install types versus Office 2010 Service Pack 1.
We both are. I think I drew the short straw, right?
You definitely did. You had to build all this stuff out. So with that, I wanna conclude. Thank you all for watching and goodbye for now.
Is it hard for you to drive and interview at the same time?
No, I'm good.